Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
So 7:12 here in Chicago. It's 3:12 in the afternoon in Kyiv right now. We're happy to be joined by Volodymyr Runets, a special correspondent at ICTV. And Volodymyr, you're joining us from the outskirts of Kyiv this morning, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Good morning.
Good morning. Are you trying to get out of Ukraine right now? Paint us a picture of what is happening on the ground where you are and on your journey right now.
Basically, this is the first time I managed to get home. At the beginning of the week, I went to the east of the country, to Mariupol, to cover the already existing conflict. But as soon as we arrived early next morning, we found out that the whole of Ukraine was under attack. So we ended up being evacuated from Mariupol, and we had to head back to Kyiv. And since I got back to Kyiv on Wednesday evening, I couldn't make it home, and I spent all the nights at the basement of my residential complex, which is 900 apartments, and all of the people spent their nights in the basement with their children because of the heavy shelling and heavy shooting around Kyiv, and particularly around this residential area. We could hear heavy fighting all the way through. Also tonight, this morning, I myself, the local authorities, Vitaly Klitschko, the mayor of Kyiv, declared curfew, which started late on Saturday and just finished this morning. So we couldn't leave the basement, basically, because it was illegal. So we had to spend all the time there. But we could hear what was going on, because everyone is following the news as well. And we could hear missiles just flying over the residential building that we were under.
It sounds incredibly scary. I'm picturing, you know, the bombings of World War II and people hunkering in subway stations in London. And I'm hearing reports of that in Kyiv, too. We are hearing and we see reports of just how much resolve the people have and how the military and the citizens are doing a good job so far of holding back Russian forces. Is that the reality of what you are hearing and the mood that you're experiencing from people that you're interacting with?
Well, basically, yes. Most of the people feel like that. What my perception is that a lot of people in these 5 days of war and invasion, they got accustomed to the new reality they have to face. And they all feel mobilized. A lot of people are joining army units, like territorial self-defense units, and which are completely full. If I decided to enroll tonight, I wouldn't be able to, because they are full and there's no firearms to supply to everyone who wants to go and protect their cities and their country in general. Also, the regular military units are full. A lot of people volunteer to get enlisted in the army and join the battalions and platoons that are now fighting in the front lines all across the country. So that is the feeling. A lot of volunteers also mobilized. We used to observe this kind of feeling back in 2014 when Russia annexed the Crimean Peninsula and also invaded Donbass and also used proxies in Donbass and started military action there. So this pretty much feels like that, but a lot more stronger. A lot of people are just transferring money out of their bank accounts to support the army. Also, I'm getting a lot of phone calls from abroad. People are asking, how can we help? What can we do? And never mind the government, just regular people want to make a contribution to support Ukraine so in the end it can win.
Are people getting the news from the outside world in there when they're sheltering in place to the idea that Germany is going to be sending weapons to Ukraine, that Sweden is stepping up, that America is sending aid in the form of money and weapons considerations as well? Is that news reaching Ukrainians, and does it give them hope?
Well, every piece of news is reaching every Ukrainian eye and ear. because practically all the basements have Wi-Fi and the internet is pretty good. So there are no problems reading the, and of course everyone is following what's happening in the world. Is Ukraine getting enough support? Well, everyone was a bit disappointed about the decision to only partly turn Russia off SWIFT, the bank connection system. But other than that, people are happy that they get all the support from regular people, like going, waving flags around and arranging rallies all over the world, to government decisions to support Ukraine and actually provide the weapons. So basically, Ukrainians can protect themselves from the military aggression that Russia is trying to impose.
Is the sentiment, hold on as long as you can until peace can be brokered? Is the sentiment, beat Russia and send them back home? Is it a mix of both, or is it just hour by hour, day by day, stay alive?
What I would assume that the correct wording would be, we will stand for our country as long as we can, and we don't want any Russians in our territory. And you know, back in 8 years ago, there were people supporting Putin in Ukraine saying, oh, this is not so black and white. The situation is sort of, we didn't want the rallies and we didn't want the government change 8 years ago. But now the situation is clear as that Russia is aggressive towards Ukraine and they need to be out of the country, never mind the political views people used to have before.
All right, Volodymyr, we hope you stay safe, and we'll keep this line of communication open and hopefully chat more in the future, okay?
Yeah, thank you.
A special correspondent at International Commercial Television. Just harrowing to hear of people hunkered in basement with their children, but the spirit of the Ukrainians just... You can feel it almost here as well. And obviously everyone wishing them well. We're going to continue our conversation here about Ukraine with Dan Lamothe. He is the Washington Post on the military beat. Joining us from Washington this morning. Dan, thanks for hopping on with us.
Hey, good morning.
We just chatted with a correspondent out in Ukraine, just on the outskirts of Kyiv. And, you know, we've been seeing these videos and these photos of the resolve of Ukrainians' people and them fighting back, whether it's militarily. Or I saw a video of a farmer towing away a Russian tank that was going viral. Of course, you have to be careful with what you see on the internet, whether it's true or not. But can Ukrainians hold on for a long time? I mean, what is happening with the Russian military? Do we have any new intelligence?
So, as all the assessments I'm seeing are that the Russians still have the upper hand, that the Russians still have the ability to make this extremely painful. With that said, based on the way this has gone over the first several days, the Ukrainians can dig in for a good long while. And what it's really going to come down to is a very ugly, very medieval test of wills, where it's going to be a rush to get the Ukrainians the ammunition they need to continue to do this and to continue to hold out. Meanwhile, you're seeing the Russians bring in a lot of weapons that are very alarming as far as how this goes. Multiple rocket launch systems, vacuum bombs, things that are not very precise at all, and you know, civilian casualties and things of that sort are very much going to be a concern in coming days.
Is it a matter of just holding out until maybe either Putin comes to his senses, which I know a lot of people feel like he won't, but that he can be brokered into some sort of peace deal? Is it more holding on than pushing back?
I think it's yes. I think it's holding on in a lot of ways. I think that's one of the reasons you're seeing the Ukrainians be so forward and so creative on social media. I'm taking a lot of what I'm seeing from the Ukrainian accounts also with a grain of salt, particularly the casualty numbers they've been putting out for Russian soldiers.
Right.
We have seen certainly plenty of Russian casualties that have appeared, both in accounts and in videos and things of that sort. But the number of Russians that the Ukrainians say they have killed at this point would exceed the number in the entire Iraq war for the Americans.
Wow. Yeah, exactly. Like you obviously understand the propaganda on their side, perhaps, not to use that word, but obviously they're trying to rally their own people and continue positive news. And we always have to take that with a bit of a grain of salt, I guess, in terms of actual numbers. One of the really concerning things I saw happen in Belarus yesterday, it was a referendum to waive their nuclear-free declarations in their country. Some seen it as a move for the Russians, perhaps, to move nuclear weapons into Belarus. Am I accurate in what I'm saying there, and what's your interpretation of that?
I do see all of this as concerning. The Russian announcement to send their nuclear forces in sort of a higher state of alert, that was greeted with concern in Washington, but I don't want to say fear or alarm. I think they see a lot of it as messaging at this point. And I think once, you know, if Putin were to take those sort of tools out of the toolbox, all of a sudden, the assessments of keeping NATO out of it, keeping the United States out of it, I think all of those would have to have a second look, because nuclear weapons simply do not stay, you know, within the border of one nation when you start talking about the, you know, the consequences.
I think a lot of people are saying, oh, gosh, I mean, it's been 5 days. You know, they've held on. We're seeing the ruble crash. We're seeing these sanctions starting to have an effect. Oh, boy, this is going to lead to peace. There's talks of peace talks today. Is there a chance Putin blinks on this and there is going to be a quick peace? Or do you feel that Putin was prepared, knew that this could be a possibility and could dig in even further?
I think it's probably a bit of both. I think the Ukrainians can hang on for a good long while with a whole lot of pain throughout. I mean, this is, you know, they are really fighting for their lives here, not only in terms of day by day, but also as a nation. I think when it comes to Russia, I think Putin did underestimate. I think the Russian military, you know, there are numerous indications they tried to talk him out of this. You know, they went forward anyway. And I think really what we're going to see is how is the West, how is Europe, how is the United States able to continue to flow weapons into Ukraine, which would assumedly be mostly over land routes at this point. You know, there's been some discussion of Poland bringing in arms over the border, or at least handing off arms at the border to Ukrainians. The United States has been a lot more careful about how they're talking about that, for fear of, you know, making it easier for Russia to sort of counteract.
Yeah.
But that's kind of where we are at this point is, you know, how do you flow these things in very old-fashioned ways when the airspace over Ukraine is, you know, functionally not useful? You know, it's not like the Americans are going to be flying in anything to them.
Right. Dan Lamoth is on the military beat for The Washington Post. Follow him on Twitter, at Dan Lamoth, L-A-M-O-T-H-E. And I say that because he's also retweeting interesting guides, like a Ukrainian guide on where to throw Molotov cocktails. They're putting out diagrams of Russian tanks and vehicles to help the citizens or the military or whoever defend themselves. And, Dan, I appreciate your perspective. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.